I want to talk about some aspects of the classical sigma model, classical string sigma model in type 2 string theory in the pure spinner formalism. So my talk will consist of two parts. In the first part, I will talk about some questions which involve the big ghost. It is usually, we know that big ghost is absolutely crucial in string theory. It requires to construct measure, but maybe not everybody knows that it's also important in classical supergravity. There are some questions which do not, which are difficult to answer without big ghost, just in studying properties of the classical supergravity theory. And in the second part, I will talk about some technical details of the type 2 superspace in the pure spinner formalism. Again, it's a classical supergravity superspace. I'm trying to see if I can make some meaningful use of the quadratic algebras and apply to it in any way. So let me start with a general question. What is string theory? So not in that generality. Sorry, I forgot alpha prime here. It is in pure spinner formalism, the string theory is the Wolfschmidt theory is a sigma model, but not arbitrary sigma model, but sigma model satisfying some special properties. Let us ask ourselves the question, which properties sigma model should satisfy to define a meaningful superstring background? There are not BC ghosts, just more or less generic sigma model. So it's a guess. So I guess it should have BRST symmetry and the big ghost. But so this is not enough. In fact, if you just restrict yourself with these two axioms, it's probably not enough. You need to say more. So the second is automatically satisfied locally in the target space, I think, if I'm not making a mistake, because you can always, so Q is nilpotent. I forgot to say nilpotent. Q square equals zero. So it's, you can introduce a coordinate d over d theta 1, coordinate theta 1. You can introduce coordinates locally, and then you can solve for b plus plus. And even it's nilpotent even, if I'm not making a mistake, if the central charge of t is zero, then this object is nilpotent. So this is, however, is a wrong answer for the big ghost. And the list of requirements is too naive. So somehow it is necessary to say something about singularities of the sigma model, because if there are no singularities, I think the theory will be trivial. So what we do in practice, we kind of split. We should think that some of these fields are really not matter fields and not describe space-time, but they describe ghosts. So we split into Z into matter and the ghosts. And the ghost part should be a little bit singular. So the way it usually works is somehow like this. We split X. I also denoted Z, but we split Z into Z and lambda. This should have been called the other letter. Why? So, write the action like this. So there are ghost fields and separately matter fields. And notice that the action for the ghosts is of the first order. This is generic, more or less, coupling between ghost fields and matter fields. So we write the action for the first of the first order. And of course, we could have integrated over W and arrived just at the generic action like in the previous transparency. But arrive at generic action like this if we integrate out W. But that's not the right thing to do. So for some reason, because integrating out W introduces 1 over lambda. And in some sense, we should always think about ghosts as infinitesimal objects. So important thing is that there is some singularity when lambda equals zero. This could be related also a little bit to Kevin's talk. I'm not sure, because in general, if you go far away from the singularity in the lambda direction, then we get trivial cohomology. So if the observer lives in a generic point of the target space here, he doesn't see any cohomology. But somehow it is important to remember that part of the target is really not target, but in some sense internal space. And we want to keep ourselves close to the singularity of the internal space. We should not allow lambdas to condense. So it's essential this formalism is to separate into matter and ghosts. So also another thing which I absolutely want is to have, so this is type two string theory, which means that there is two BRST charges, left and right. And I want them to be nilpotent, both of them nilpotent. Moreover, I want the corresponding currents to be holomorphic and anti-holomorphic. So this is not the case for generic action, because I'm sorry, I want to say that, of course, this does not have any split into left and right. So there are no left movers and right movers in the generic sigma model. However, I still want to keep some of it. I want to keep the BRST charges, holomorphic and anti-holomorphic. Also, I forgot to say that I want to have the ghost number symmetry, which is U1 left and U1 right. And Q left is charged under U1 left, and Q right is charged under U1 right. Moreover, this U1 symmetry should be actually not U1, but rather algebraic torus. So it should involve dilatations of rescaling of lambda also. So this rescaling allows you to scale down to lambda equals zero. And so if you put observer in such background, somehow the spaceship will delocalize along the trajectories of the torus, of the algebraic torus. So we want to, in the vicinity of the singular locus where lambda equals zero, so there is a singular locus. Then I want something like this. I want part of the fields to go to scale at the same order as lambda. They're called thetas and they're fermions. So lambda is boson and theta is fermions. And I want BRST charge to act like this. I think it follows in the other fields of higher order near the locus. So I study Q near where Q equals zero. There is a nilpotent vector field that is restricted ourselves with Q left. And there is a subspace in our manifold when Q equals zero. And I want to restrict near that subspace. So theta form the directions parallel to theta form the image of the derivative of Q at this point. So the action will necessarily be of the first order, because at the second order, you cannot, I think, preserve the action by this. The action of the second order cannot be preserved by such transformations. So it should be of the first order. And then some field will be of the second order in the vicinity of the singularity. So the BRST transformation will necessarily be some quadratic form of theta and lambda. And as it will be quadratic form, for nilpotence, we will need that lambda should satisfy some quadratic constraints. So maybe we should require something of this quadratic constraint. Maybe we should require this form Kashuli algebra. But there are some indications this is required. But in the pure spinner, we'll just put it the gamma matrices. So the gamma matrices as constraints. So it works in more detail like this. So we start with the flat space limit. So in this ideology, in this way of thinking about it, it's like starting with the flat space limit and expanding around flat space limit. So in the flat space limit, because thetas and lambdas are of the first order, the action for thetas and lambdas will be first order action, because theta and lambda are leading field, and X is a second order in the flat space limit. So W and P are conjugate momenta, and BRST operator in the flat space acts somewhat like this. So you just have to remember how it acts on theta and X, because the action on W is automatic. It follows from conservation, follows from the symmetry. So And then we want to deform. So if you study a curved space, then we have to somehow add higher order terms here. We have to add higher order terms, and this is done by adding integrated vertex operator. So we want the deformed action, the nonlinear action, to have the same properties as the original action, to have holomorphic and anti-holomorphic Q and the algebraic torus. So it's C star, it's not U1. So for this to work, we need that U is Beresty closed on shell up to total derivative. And it happens, I will explain why. That's one point of my talk. It happens that it's always possible to pass one more step. So W has ghost number one and one form. So QW equals DV. So V is called unintegrated vertex operator. And if you follow this procedure, it should be in cohomology of Q. So it's called unintegrated vertex operator. It's in cohomology of Q. So we see that the string theory should describe its own deformations. And they should be described either as adding integrated vertex operator or as cohomology of the PRST operator. So it all fits together. However, this problem faces some subtleties. So that's what we do. We approximate arbitrary manifold with a flat space in the vicinity of the point. So the order of this perturbation theory is measured by the degree of the polynomial. So remember that, as I said before, important thing is that we put in the zero of the vector field Q. And then when we approach the zero of Q, then we see that there is some fields are of the same order and other fields are. So important thing is that this, if we follow this procedure, then this vertex operators, this integrated vertex operators or unintegrated vertex operators will be polynomial, not exponential. In physics, we usually study wave functions. Oops, sorry. Wave functions which are exponential in X. But for this program, we need polynomial vertex operators, and they are funny because they have some funny properties which are interesting to study. So the first funny thing is that in the leading order, U actually equals to zero. So I told you that we are going to deform theory by adding something to the action, but it turns out that the most leading order of perturbation cannot be seen at the level of the action. What gets actually deformed is the Beresty operator. Instead of this, you deform, it is possible to deform Beresty operator without deforming the action. Generally, if you deform the action, the Beresty operator also gets deformed. Why? Because this first identity is only satisfied on shell. However, it turns out that there are deformations of Beresty operator which do not correspond to any deformations of action, so which still respect even S flat. So they correspond to linear dilaton. So notice that this is explicit formula. Notice that this thing is actually a ghost number one vertex corresponding to the left supersymmetry transformation. So this is a type two theory. It has left and right supersymmetries. And generally speaking, ghost number one vertices correspond to global symmetries. So this one corresponds to supersymmetry transformation, and S is this is, if you think of this as Beresty charge, then S should be a density of neuter charge corresponding to left Beresty transformation. This is right. Yeah, this is right Beresty, right supersymmetry transformation. This is left supersymmetry transformation. So this is a corresponding integrated vertex, but there is no deformation. There is no, this is unintegrated vertex, but there is no integrated vertex because it turns out that there is ghost number one conserved charge. So far so good, but unfortunately, if you put a plus sign here, then this is also a meaningful deformation of the Beresty charge. However, it does not lead to anything in supergravity. There are no physical, it does not correspond to anything physical, any physical deformations of the string theory. The state is actually unphysical. So this is strange because the theory, if you deform with this Beresty operator as such, like this, at first it seems that at least the classical sigma model is well defined and satisfies all the axioms. However, this is bad deformation. Yeah, you can think both ways. You can think that this is, well, let us think of it as a density. You deform the density of BRST charge in this way.
So Q is the current.
Yeah, current, yes.
And S is also the supersymmetric current?
Yeah. You can think this way. Or you can think, I'm sorry, I put capital letters. It's a mistake. So more alarmingly, there are Gauss number 3 vertex operators. So Gauss number 2 corresponds to deformations of the action, but Gauss number 3 are alarming because they can abstract linearized deformations. It turns out that the cohomology of the Gauss number 3 is isomorphic up to some zero mod subtleties to the cohomology of the Gauss number 2. So it can be seen as follows. So the Gauss number 1 vertices correspond to global conserved charges. If you multiply Gauss number 1, Gauss number 2, it turns out that you get something non-trivial in cohomology. Namely, you get a Gauss number 3 vertex, which corresponds to T acting on phi. As I said, there is some isomorphism. For now, we don't see yet if it's canonical or not, but there is some isomorphism between the Hilbert, between the space of Gauss number 2 states and space of Gauss number 3 states. So it goes like this. Yes.
Take the BRST variation on the right hand side, it should be zero.
No, I think it will become total derivative. Because
Q on S, I see.
Because QS is D of this thing, remember. This thing is a vertex operator, Gauss number 1 vertex operator corresponding to this current. So if you hit this with Q, you get D, and probably because of something like that. However, if we put a 5 form here instead of the 1 form, then you could undo such a variation of BRST transformation by field redefinitions. However, if there is gamma one, just one gamma matrix here, then you cannot. It's non-trivial deformation. So this Gauss number 3 vertex operators are similar to Gauss number 2 vertex operators. They transform in the same representation of the supersymmetry. So they can abstract. Let me briefly remind. So how does the abstraction go? So if in flat space V2 is annihilated by Q, and suppose that it represents a cohomology of Q flat space, so Q flat space is this Q. This Q flat space. But then when we deform with some other linearized solution, then the Q also get deformed. And then V2 is not annihilated by the deformed Q. But however, it is true that what's on the right-hand side is Q closed. So the question is whether it's BRST exact or not. Well, really, it's better to, this obstacle is symmetric into phi and phi twiddle. So you add 2, and then the question is whether you can find x such that this solves, this is consistent action to epsilon twiddle, to the second order. So there is some.
Isn't it the same condition that it has to satisfy equations of motion to the next order?
Yes. Equations of motion equivalent to Q squared equals zero. This equations of motion of one of the consequences of the wonderful equation Q squared equals zero. Generally you can follow this. It's I think everybody would agree that Gauss number 3 is obstacle to nonlinear solution. Such an obstacle would be a disaster, of course. It would mean that the theory is inconsistent. So what helps us is a dghost. So there is a, remember, that's what I'm saying, that you don't really need dghost at the classical level in supergravity, but to understand supergravity, you need dghost. It's helpful to understanding supergravity. Because at the quantum level, it allows you to define this bracket operation as a deviation from being differentiation, from satisfying the Leibniz rule. And then, so if you believe that this bracket operation is precisely the obstacle, if you believe that, so how it works, So let me first answer the first question. What happens to non-physical states? Non-physical states are non-physical because they're not annihilated by B0 minus B0 bar. So the simplest example to see unphysical deformations is that, to consider so-called beta deformations of Lane-Strassler, which consists of wedge product of two currents. So the corresponding unintegrated vertex is the product of B is just a constant matrix. So it's just a product of two Gauss number one vertices. So it's non-physical when B is non-zero, when internal commutator is non-zero. So we must postulate. What happens if you don't postulate it? So it turns out that the Wolschitt action will be perfectly consistent as a classical action. And there is everything consistent, nice BRST symmetry, but at the quantum theory will have anomaly at the level of one loop, anomaly in the holomorphicity of the BRST current. Somehow the fact, so this can be verified directly, but somehow it is related to the fact that B0 minus B0 bar V2 is, if B0 minus B0 bar V2 is not equal to zero, then we have this anomaly at the level of one loop. So it is not true that equations of supergravity follow from classical consistency of the string Wolschitt action. They almost follow, but there are some non-physical states which has to be removed. You still have to look at the one loop level. As I said, when you study, but the zero momentum is not just. If you want to study the deformation of a theory, then it's the leading order. Except for, as I said, this ghost is called ghost because it's very, it should be structure of indeed VV algebra. And moreover, so I hope actually either Carlos or Oliver will talk about it, so they observe some of the structure. But the big ghost is very complicated. And
the structure of VV algebra, like all the fields of supergravity.
Well, so I can define, for example, Gerstenhaber bracket on vertex operators just as a deformation, as an obstacle for deformation. But that only works on shell. So to have BV algebra, you need to define Gerstenhaber algebra on the cochains, not just on cohomology. So for this, you need the B ghost. So it is still, it may seem strange that supergravity equations of motion fail for such non-physical deformations. However, it turns out that something is missing from supergravity solution. Namely, if the vertex is non-physical, then you cannot find dilaton. The equation for the dilaton becomes inconsistent. So I have a paper called Cornering Non-Physical Vertex where I describe it. So without dilaton superfield, the classical solution of supergravity is not the classical solution of supergravity. And so supergravity fails for such deformations. And the dilaton, remember, I forgot put alpha prime there, but it's essentially alpha prime effect. So to fully fully specify supergravity equations, you need to go to one loop level. So how B-ghost helps here? So we conjecture that this obstacle is actually, it should be bilinear in phi and phi 3. And we conjectured it's the Dirichlet-Hilbert bracket, which is defined from B0 minus B0 bar. And I think there should be a relation between H3 and H2. So it turns out that, well, I didn't verify it, but if you know how to work with the B ghost, you should see that it's an isomorphism, or almost isomorphism, between H3 and H2. Then it follows from this formula that even though there are ghost number three cohomology, but the actual obstacle still vanishes because we automatically have this. If we do it, because B0 minus B0 bar is the derivation of the bracket, this is one of the features of this formalism. There's not derivations of the product, but are derivations of the bracket. So if V2 and V2 are both physical, then B0 minus B0 bar should annihilate the bracket. But B0 minus B0 bar does not annihilate H3. So it must be that V2 V2 is trivial. It's BRST trivial, actually, because of this argument. So the actual cohomology vanishes. But you see, to see it, you need B0 ghost. Also, it's interesting to observe that physical and non-physical states are mutually abstracted. So the non-physical states are rather branch. And this also explains why there is finite dimensional only condition. So one consequence of this fact that they're mutually abstracted is that if you take your general action, maybe just expand it at some point in flat space. Take generic supergravity solution, complicated nonlinear supergravity wave. Expand it in the around some point around some point of space-time, and to the leading order, and see what would be the BRST operators. And at the leading order, you should see that your BRST operator is this, and not this. So you will not get a plus sign, but always minus sign. And this is absolutely elementary statement, but I don't know how to prove it in elementary way without using the B ghost. And because I don't know very well how to use the B ghost, I would not be able to prove it to you at all. Another interesting exercise, which I unfortunately haven't done, would be just to hit it with the B ghost and see that you have d square x. So the commutator of this with the B ghost should give d square x. Not the commutator, because there is a z in the integral. So integral z b with this should give you d square x, the Fagan-Fuchs deformation of the energy momentum tensor. This would be interesting to do. I haven't done it. Right, so this I explained. So it's however, I hope the next speakers will talk more about B ghost, and it requires introduction of more fields. So it would be fair to say that B-ghost is not sufficiently well understood, but I would wish that it were better understood, even at the level of classical supergravity. So this, of course, is also important for computation of amplitudes, because in fact, all this classical supergravity, you can introduce, first of all, alpha prime corrections in it. And in general, this serves as some sort of generating function of all the scattering amplitudes. The classical supergravity solution should be understood as generating functions of amplitudes, at least at the tree level, certainly. So it's important to study it, I think. So in the second part, I will try to talk some more about the actual details of the type 2B superspace. And in particular, I will explain or try to explain this formula. So this formula is for open string. It's an integrated vertex operator, which Nathan wrote in his talk. So it looks a bit complicated. I will give some equally complicated mathematical interpretation of it. But except for this is for open string. So for closed string, we should have something d theta, d theta, d theta left, d theta right. So it will be a dimension two operator. It's something like a product of two such operators. So let us look closer at the supergravity data. What structures do we need to introduce on a flat space on space-time in order for it to be a consistent superstring background? So remember that as I already explained, the pure spin ergos should be considered infinitesimal in some sense, infinitesimal quantity. So I want to consider them, so the pure spinner cone, I want to consider it to be a small cone. It should be a cone-like bundle over the space-time. So because I want the transition function, so the transition function should preserve this pure spinner constraint, which is, again, why does it work? I took the wrong turn. So it is this constraint which follows from the nilpotency of Beresteyn transformation. So it is very useful to think about the associated principal bundle. So lambdas live in a bundle, non-trivial bundle over matter fields. So the first thing which we observe is that every point of the space-time, this is purely matter field, so without Gauss, just theta and x. So there is a distribution. This distribution is just because we are at the locus when q equals zero, so we can take derivative of u, and this would be, this distribution would be image. And obviously, this is the first thing which we should require, the existence of some kind of distribution in the tangent space. So it has left and right part, because the lambda left and lambda right. Moreover, so now I want to build a principal bundle, because I don't want cone bundle, I want to associate a principal bundle. It would be important for me. So I want to put some tetrad in every plane of the distribution and consider its orbit under this, under HL times HR. So my fiber of the fiber of M hat will be defined as a orbit of actions of this group on some 30-tuple of vectors. On some 30-tuple, but this original 30-tuple is not part of the supergravity data, only its orbit. So not only I need a distribution, but I need this orbit of the 30-tuple of vectors. So this is how sigma model for a DS5 versus 5 is constructed. So the space-time is the cassette space of PSU224, but we gauge, we consider the target space PSU224, and then there are some gauge symmetries. So equivalently, we can consider some fixed spinner representation of HL and HR, and consider the space of maps to our distribution. It's just equivalent because every such map is parameterized by a 30-tuple of vector. So we consider the orbit of this map. The actual fiber is the orbit of this map of HLHR. So now, nice. Now we know what is our target space. It's a cone over associated. It's a cone in the vector bundle associated to principal bundle M hat, which consists of tetrads. So we want to study how Q acts. We know there is an odd vector field here. So we postulate the action on the matter field. So on M, it works on M, tetras and lambda. It will act like this. Remember, this E are the vectors from our 30-tuple. This is not a new postulate. It's essentially just the way we parameterize lambda left and lambda right. It just explains how we introduced coordinates on the space of on the Gauss sector. But it does not explain how Q acts on lambda left and lambda right. So now I want to understand, so this is only projection on M. Now I want to look more closely about how it acts on M hat and on pure spinner Gauss. So remember, so this is our target space. These two things are cones. And now this funny notations means that we just have to consider just the product of M hat, the principal bundle with the two cones, and then divide by the action of the H left and H right, the symmetry. which basically rotates lambda. So lambda lives in the cone, and E parameterizes the fiber here. So you rotate E and lambda in such a way that this is invariant. So this is tautological, and that's how this HL times HR acts. So I want to divide by it. So it's a general feature in geometry that if you have some space like X over G, the principal bundle structure, then the vector fields on this space can be obtained by invariant vector fields on the numerator modulo vertical vector fields. Vertical means tangent to the orbit. This is general fact. So this is Lie algebra, or even algebraic over the space. And so it turns out that this is vertical vector fields form ideal. So you can just consider factor space, and this will still have commutator operation. So the idea now is the following. So it's absolutely important for us that CL and CR are one orbit of H. So hat here means that I consider rescaling also. Consider rescaling besides rotations of spinners. And hat here means that it is a principal bundle over M. So this is a small hat and this is a big hat. So the idea is to use the fact that CL and CR are single orbits of HL and HR. By the way, this is also useful in the proof of causality of the pure spinner constraint. So the idea is to modify Q. So it's defined modulo vertical vector field. So we add some vertical vector field so that the modified Q doesn't act as zero on CA cross CR. This is kind of compensating gauge transformation. So consider this modified Q hat. It's an element of vector fields, the space of vector fields on M hat now, because it doesn't act on CA cross CR. And it has the following form. So it has the following form where d alpha l and d alpha hat are some vector fields on m hat. And when you act by global symmetries on them, they would transform covariantly. So they're not invariant, but they transform covariantly. If you consider Lie derivatives of them with respect to the vector infinitesimal vector fields of H, then it will be the same as acting on the index H with the corresponding finite dimensional spinner representation of spin algebra. So in this way, we defined 32 vector fields, 16 vector fields d alpha and 16 vector fields d alpha hat on m hat. These are all vector fields on m hat. However, it is important that this definition is not unambiguous. So from Q, the fundamental object is Q. When we define D from it, this is not quite, there is some ambiguity. I will explain it in a moment. But now let me just describe what we have. So we have a map D from the spinner representation of HL and HR into the vector fields on the principal bundle over space-time, which this map commutes with the action of H. This is a covariant property. And then there are supergravity constraints. So supergravity constraints follow from the fact that Q is nilpotent. What do we have here? They resemble the constraints of the supersymmetric Young-Mills algebra. So d alpha with d alpha gives you AM, gives you something proportional to the gamma matrix. And dr with dr, and dl with dr is zero. Dr with dr is also something proportional to the gamma matrix, except for there are vertical corrections. So the corrections are vertical vector fields. They are some kind of curvatures. So vertical means tangent to the fiber. So I must stress that satisfaction of this supergravity constraints depends crucially on the vertical components of D. If you change the vertical components, then of course these equations will fail. So we know that in a consistent supergravity equation, we can define such vector field D, which satisfies this. So there is some ambiguity because that vertical vector field was not unambiguously defined. There is something that stabilizes still the point on the pure spinner cone. And I don't want to talk much about it, but it's very interesting ambiguity because it's kind of under control. I add to D something horizontal, which is of this form. This was first. So in a different language, it was obtained in the paper of Berkowitz and Howe. But my language is, my approach is different. I approach from a different point of view. So this must satisfy, this must be the shift of Berkowitz and Howe, the shift symmetry called in their paper. So it depends on two parameters which satisfy this. And then omega is horizontal vector fields which constructed from H. This is ambiguity. It's important to keep in mind this ambiguity because it kind of, it's interesting to observe. It's interesting to check that things are well defined under this ambiguity on every step of. So let us see how it looks in, how it works in ADS5 cross S5. Then M hat is PSU 224. And actually D, so there is algebra PSU 224 that is generated by some odd generators and some even generators. And there is also the Z4 grading. So the index of the generator corresponds to Z4 grading. So T3 commutator with anti-commutator with T3 will give you something, will give you T2. So the action is built from the current. So G is this. So this is M, and this is the fiber. Some matter fields. And this exponential of omega describes the tetrad. The sort of tuple is here. It turns out that in this case, some of the curvatures vanish. So this is only term commutation of D left and D right, but D left with D left just gives you the pure Young-Mills constraint. Just this it was in Young-Mills theory. So let us look at the commutators of D alpha. So we will have the same as we had in Young-Mills plus something vertical. We can even continue. So let us commute again with D. It turns out that the commutator will be proportional to the gamma matrix and therefore defines some new vector field on M hat called W. And this W, so this is true modular, with this symbol I denote the linear span, the linear hull of all the linear combinations of D alphas, some coefficients which are functions on M hat.
Just to make sure I don't misunderstand the notation, this A with a double slash is something like partial minus nonlinear field.
Yeah, so in flat space, it will be like this. D is this, and A is this.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So this is notation. Yeah, it's unfortunate notation. It should be called also D. That's what, yeah. So W is defined only modular D and vertical. So it's also possible to prove that D with W anti-commutator gives you something which is proportional to two gamma matrices. Okay, so I. So this is how it works. Let me just explain how in flat space it works like this, but in flat space, it turns out that W equals zero. However, in a general background with non-degenerate Ramon-Ramon field, it turns out that these three vector fields plus the vertical vector fields form a basis of TM hat. This means that for any vector field, for any vector in TM, we can decompose. And the coefficient of W is very nice because it is well defined. It does not depend on any of those ambiguities which we studied previously. However, the coefficient of VM is also actually nice because it's ambiguous only under shifts. But shifts are nice. It's not, it is ambiguity, but the ambiguity which is under control. So V alpha is perfectly well defined and Vm is also good. V alpha is awful because it suffers from the fact that the things are only modular. You don't even know how to define W. So you define it somehow, but there is absolutely no control over the vertical component of W. Vertical component of W is ambiguous. So this V alpha, however, this the coefficient of expansion in front of W I don't know. I started, I think, 10 minutes later, no?
Yes.
Okay, so I have 10 minutes, no? So the first thing is that, so it's interesting to play with this decomposition. For example, we can commute d with w and then decompose and take this coefficient of w. So this is some, this should be identified by some supergravity field. And in my paper, I proven that modular shift transformation, this is the same as this supergravity field in the Berkowitz and Howe paper, which also defined up to shift transformation. So here actually shifts help because you know how these fields in Berkowitz language and Howe transform under shift transformation. And I know how my field transform under shift transformation. So it helps to establish relation between them. However, relation is non-trivial. And unfortunately, my proof is very roundabout. It's very artificial. And surprisingly, I don't have a good proof of this. So even better, so you can expand D. Remember that we played all this game only with left. We forgot for now the right Ds. We only played with the left Ds. But we can do the same game with right Ds. And in particular, we can expand right D in terms of Ws. So this thing should be identified with the Ramon-Ramon field, with the Ramon-Ramon B-spinner in the Berkowitz and Howe. However, I don't have proof of it. I don't have proof of it. And also, we should be able to expand D left in terms of W right. And it should give the same coefficients, but I don't have proof of it. So it's conjectural. Now, unfortunately, to explain the relation between integrated and unintegrated vertex operator, I have to use similar trick, but with expansion of vector in terms of dr and w, but for on the string Wolschitz now. Now, I remember that string has a Wolschitz. Yeah? And the Wolschitz is foliated by, through every point of the Wolschitz pass two characteristics, positive characteristic and negative characteristic. So these are light-like directions in the target space. This, when induced metric vanishes on them. And so it's possible to introduce coordinates. So the DDL, coordinates tau plus and tau minus, where characteristics are given by tau minus equals constant and tau plus equals constant. So let us consider all fields on the string Wolschitz area. So some fields come from the target space. You can just take, for example, Ramon-Ramon B-spinner, and it's a function on the target space, but we restricted on the string Wolschitz. So now after we restricted to the string Wolschitz, after we evaluated it on z tau plus tau minus, it became a field on the string Wolschitz. Other fields, such as W plus, for example, the momentum conjugate to pure spinner, it genuinely lives on the string Wolschitz. There is no such target space. But it's so this is tautological identity. It just says that you can consider such things which come from the target space either as a function of the target space or function on the Wolschitz. But somehow this tautology is useful because I want to write something that I call Maurer-Cartan equation. Maurer-Cartan equation is d tau plus d tau minus equals zero. But when we act with d tau plus, when we act on things like w, on thing in x of or s means of shell, we just act by d over d tau plus on the string field, on the string Wolschitz field. But when we act here, we decompose in the tetrad. We act as a vector field. So when we, Maurer-Cartan equation simply says that if you decompose so you take a Wolschitz velocity, d over d tau plus of the Wolschitz coordinate, and you decompose it into some tetrad, which lives in the target space. Then this is zero. In the following sense, d over d tau plus act on j minus, d over d tau minus on j plus, and EA and EB commute as vector fields in the target space. So So let us do it, let us play this game with our natural basis, which we now have, with the left natural basis. So we have something like this. This defines interesting Wolfschmidt currents. Now, this allows me to define Wolfschmidt currents. This are quantities I call Wolfschmidt currents. There are some special Wolfschmidt fields. So in my paper, I proven that particular the coefficient of W alpha, just ignore AM here. The coefficient of W alpha, as I said, it's well defined. So I proven that it can be identified with the matter part of the density of the BRST charge. However, the proof is surprisingly roundabout. Unfortunately, I don't have a good proof of this. So you can consider it unfinished. So psi is identified to the matter part of D. D also has some W lambda part. Now there is a zero curvature equation, and with this rule that we have to commute the commutator of the vector fields. Well, in EDS 5 crosses 5, it is well known because, but it's well known identity. It just says that it's just because this thing is just dg g minus 1, so it's a standard Maurer-Cartan equation. However, there is a non-trivial generalization leading to integrability. So I can introduce a spectral parameter here. I can introduce a spectral parameter. So what is spectral parameter? It means that I'm promoting the ADS algebra PSU 224, this algebra of global symmetries of ADS space. I'm promoting it to twisted loop algebra. And then it turns out that if I replace in my formula, I just replace T's with the generators of twisted loop algebra, Z is a spectral parameter. Then I still have zero curvature equations, but except for I need to add some terms which are zero when Z equals one. Oh, not one here. So sorry, this is T zero minus T zero. Like here is correct. In the second leg, it's correct. Here should be T zero. So this was discovered by Breno Valillo. This identity leads to integrability of ADS. I want to claim that there is similar identity not only in ADS but in arbitrary supergravity background, but it does not lead to integrability because the algebra is not twisted loop algebra but something more complicated. So we want to say that now d alpha is not equal to t alpha, but d alpha became, it was t alpha, but now it became generator of loop algebra. I want to generalize this procedure and promote it to something like the sum of the two superyoung Mills algebras. So this means, so I start with T alpha 3, T alpha, T beta 3. Now I'm saying that the commutator is not Tm, but Tm left. And T1, T1, it was the same Tm, but now I'm calling it Tm right. And then similarly, this T alpha with Tm with T1 beta, this is like D left. AM, D left AM, W, etc. So there is infinite dimensional algebra. And similarly on the right generators, I define the Young-Mills algebra. So it's two copies of Young-Mills algebra, left Young-Mills algebra and right Young-Mills algebra. So it only explains how the generators should commute among each other. That's what I have to explain still. So yeah, P has to be invertible, yeah. Although there is a limit can be analyzed when P is non-zero, but when P is non-invertible, but in general it should be invertible because W is, otherwise W would be zero and you would not be able to play this game. So I want with this promotion, after this promotion, I want, after this extension, it's called extension in the algebras, I think when I extend the Lie algebra to something, some more general Lie algebra, so the original Lie algebra is factored by some ideal. So I want still to have zero curvature equations. So the only chance to have it is the following. I want D left with D right to be proportional to the vertical vector field. The structure constant is I keep the commutator the same as it was for in PSL. So now I have the infinite dimensional Lie algebra generated by these letters. D alpha form the alpha and the right, the left and the right form two copies of Young-Mills algebra. So you have to prove that this commutation relation is consistent in the sense that it satisfies the resulting algebra satisfies PBW property. For this, I need a property of pure spinners. It depends on the pure spinner constraints, which is called causality. And I'm not going to discuss it now, so I will just skip two transparencies. But I want to stress that this property serves for two purposes. A, to prove that this algebra is consistent, to prove that this algebra is consistent. And to prove this algebra is consistent is very similar in spirit to proving that linearized perturbation of supergravity are unobstructed. It is a similar type of calculation. However, I don't know if this is directly related. And of course, both things should use causality.
Should use what?
They should use the property, some property of pure spinner constraint, of property of gamma matrices, which I don't have time to discuss, but we could discuss. So there is the pure spinner constraints are not arbitrary. If you remember this, the start of my talk, so I said that string theory should have singularity locus where the BRST field is zero. Then there is some quadratic form. So this quadratic form probably should not be arbitrary, but it should satisfy some properties. Embarrassingly, however, in the 11-dimensional supergravity, this form does not satisfy that property. The quadratic form does not satisfy, because 11-dimensional pure spinners are not causal. But maybe in superstring theory, it should satisfy. Yeah, so it means, this property means two things, that this algebra is well-defined, satisfies VBV, and at the same time, it means that it implies something about the cohomology of the BRST complex. It means that cohomology of BRST complex can be expressed in terms of Lie algebra cohomology of L. So I skip ideas. Unfortunately, so that's one thing which kind of turns me off a little bit, but not completely. So in general spacetime, in ADS, this algebra L works. In general spacetime, you need algebraic because if you take two commutators, if you take commutators and there are these curvatures, and instead of T0, which was a fixed element of the Lie algebra in the ADS case, here I have something X dependent. So I need it to be algebraic over M hat. And this is similar to how, so if you have, so you know, for example, for Dirac complex, it's cohomology of the algebraic vector fields on the manifold, but on a symmetric space, on a group manifold, it becomes cohomology of Lie algebra. So similarly, if you pass from generic spacetime to ADS, then cohomology of this algebraic should become cohomology of this algebra A, which is still infinite dimensional. So there is some notion, there must be some notion of relative cohomology, relative with respect to vertical component of the algebraic, which gives me the same thing as cohomology of the BRST operator. And then the relation between integrated and unintegrated vertex is very simple. You simply take this element of cohomology of Gauss number two, which corresponds to unintegrated vertex, and substitute into it, evaluate it on this thing, G minus lambda. And then you get a function. So G minus lambda is J. So these are Wolschitt currents, J plus and J minus. So the first part is the one form. The second part is has Gauss number one, zero form with Gauss number one. You simply substitute it into your cocycle. It's bilinear in it's H2, so you have to substitute wedge product of G minus lambda, wedge G minus lambda. And you can prove that if psi is the cocycle of relative Lie algebra cohomology or Lie algebraic cohomology, then this thing would become the cocycle of this D plus Q BRST. So the top component of this inhomogeneous form would be integrated vertex operator, and the bottom component will be unintegrated. And this procedure, we did not use Big Ghost. So we were able to establish correspondence between integrated and integrated without using Big Ghost. So However, I should stress that many things here are somewhat conjectural because I haven't verified all the computation. For example, to verify the zero curvature equation in the algebraic case, in the general case, it's quite complicated. So I only partially looked into things. So it's, but I have a feeling that this is how it works. So the conclusion is that, I'm not saying that, of course, Bigos is absolutely crucial, and without Bigos string theory is no string theory. However, it's good to know, it's interesting to know that some things work without Bigos, and maybe we could study the property of the Bigos, or at least check various properties of Bigos, verifying how it interacts with this type of reasoning. For example, this thing, unfortunately, I haven't done. Just take this thing corresponding to deformation of the Beresti operator and compute its OPE with the Bigos. And of course, in the bosonic string, we would expect that this would give us d square x, the deformation of the Feigen-Fuchs deformation of the energy momentum tensor, because that's what linear dilaton is. But here I did not do the calculation. It's a difficult calculation. I don't know how to do it. But also I think I didn't think about it sufficiently. Okay. Thank you. Yes. You do it, yes, but it's done in your paper with how it's done in the different way. It may be similar but different because you start commuting D with D. I don't know how to comment. I was not able to establish the relation between what I'm trying to do with the standard supergravity. Just different approach. The initial point is the same. You start with Q square equals zero.
Yeah, so okay. It will have a new standard.
Shall we close the?
Yeah.